been a long weekend for us. You're both post-call and pre-call, and I'm on-call.
And I prepared for today by bringing us some extra processed snacks.
I mean, I guess the situation just called for it. Do you remember those rectangular school lunch pizzas that they would have?
The ones that would survive in your shelter for the next 50 years?
Yeah, I felt like sometimes people put them in their locker and a week later they looked exactly the same.
Well, California's calling time on those.
That is right.
They are the first state to officially phase out ultra-processed foods from public school meals.
Yes, just last week, Governor Newsom of California signed a bill that by 2035, there will be no ultra-processed food in school breakfasts or lunches statewide. And that's huge because for millions of kids, the school cafeteria is their most reliable source of nutrition every single day.
So maybe we should introduce. We didn't do introductions today.
Oh my gosh, this is how you know that we're just working too much. Welcome to this week's episode of the Rowland Forward Podcast.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
We're both clinicians that are currently
on call.
Tired. And we're also researchers.
And when I say that I'm on call, the way that my hospital runs it is I'll be on call from Friday, 5 p.m. until Monday, 8 a.m. So it is expected that I have my phone on me, that I go to the hospital in the morning, but I am allowed to do things in my free time, like go to the gym or record a podcast. So I'm not doing this from within the hospital. I'm at home. I just have my phone next to me. And if it goes ding, 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 then I'll have to go answer it.
Mike, that's both a blessing and a curse. As an emergency physician, I can't be on call because I'm either working or not.
Yeah, you're in-house or you're at home.
And sometimes I'm like, oh, rather than working overnight, I'd rather have someone call me three times overnight to wake up. But actually, when I sleep, I sleep.
Check in with me tomorrow. I'll let you know how many times they woke me up. All right. So in today's episode, we're going to walk through what ultra-processed really means, why it matters for kids' health, how schools are adapting, and what families can do to keep mealtime realistic, because we're all about realism here, and healthy.
So let's get started. Let's start by decoding this word that everyone's throwing around, processed, ultra-processed. I mean, some things are really clear. Those like Little Debbie cosmic brownies that were my favorite.
The zebra Twinkies? What were the zebra cakes? You know
zebra
the ones?
Cake. Yes, I know exactly the ones.
Never allowed to have them. It was the only thing I wanted.
So like that's a little bit more clear, but other things a little bit less clear. And it's particularly hard to understand because not all processing is bad.
Pasteurized milk?
Good.
Baking bread?
Good. Also delicious.
Canning beans?
Good. I mean, it's great that we have access to beans all winter long.
So those are all examples of how food is processed. Nutrition scientists use something called the NOVA classification to describe how much food is transformed before it arrives on your plate. This isn't about calories or carbs. It's about the extent and the purpose of the processing that happens.
And it breaks it down into several groups. Group one is unprocessed or minimally processed.
Things like apples, rice, eggs, frozen veggies.
Group two is processed culinary ingredients.
This is going to be your butter, your sugar, your salt, the things that you cook with.
Group three are considered processed foods.
This will be a simple combination of things in the first two groups. So, for example, cheese, canned beans, plain bread.
And group four is what people have been really focused on, ultra-processed foods.
This is the industrial stuff that is built mostly from food extract and additives. Chips, sodas, sweetened yogurt, flavored cereals, chicken nuggets.
So basically everything I want 3 a.m. on an overnight shift.
Yeah, what's available in the vending machine at the hospital. And the reality is when you grab something from the vending machine at the hospital, you can't pronounce half the ingredients or it comes in the shape that you've just never seen in nature, then it's probably ultra processed.
And that distinction matters because ultra-processed foods are engineered for shelf life, texture, and flavor, not for nourishment. They're convenient at 3 a.m, but they're also the ones linked most strongly to different health hazards like diabetes, obesity, and other chronic diseases.
And let's get into the science behind these ultra-processed foods. Diets that are high in ultra-processed foods are, like you said, linked to obesity, insulin resistance, hypertension, and higher all-cause mortality in adults. And pediatric data are starting to mirror those same findings.
In kids, researchers are seeing that ultra-processed foods tend to raise your post-meal blood sugar faster. So you get a big spike of insulin, and that can drive your hunger back up again faster. These foods are also lower in fibers and micronutrients, things like iron, calcium, and folate. So you might feel full, but you're not quite nourished.
And I'm a psychiatrist here. Let's talk about the gut-brain axis. This is this idea that what you're eating and what's in your gut is affecting your brain and your mood. We know that foods will change the gut microbiome and that these ultra-processed foods can lead to more inflammation in your gut. Some studies have even linked diets that are high in ultra-processed foods with worse sleep, fatigue, and higher rates of anxiety and depression.
Exactly. So a meta-analysis that combined the results of nearly 20 studies looking at both adults and children found that greater ultra-processed food consumption was associated with increased odds of depressive and anxiety symptoms. This is when they took a large group of people, they asked them what their daily diet was and what their symptoms were. When they evaluated long-term, when they followed groups of people, they also found that higher ultra-processed foods intake was associated with increased risk of later developing depressive symptoms.
So to be clear, these are studies that combined results in both adults and kids together. And these are also studies that looked at association, not cause and effect, where we can prove that one thing caused another. But it does fit what we see clinically. Kids that are eating a lot of ultra-processed foods are sometimes reporting fatigue, irritability, and parents are concerned about focus.
And this is worrisome because a recent CDC report showed that children aged 1 to 18 consume nearly 2/3 of their daily calories from ultra-processed foods.
2/3? Wow, I didn't realize it was that high. Makes me want to go count up what my daughter is eating. Really thinking about to go grocery shopping after this. And I'm like, okay, there would be some different stuff in the cart today.
If we know all of this, why are school trays still full of ultra-processed food?
As a mom about to go to the grocery store, I can tell you, it's cheap, shelf-stable, and easy. Sure, I can make my daughter a fresh crepe in the morning, but making her a fresh crepe each and every morning is a lot of work versus grabbing a 5-pack of ultra-processed crepes, and then she just gets one out of the pack every morning. It's so much easier. And you know, many cafeterias don't even have full kitchens. They just have microwaves and warming trays.
But I think it's important to note that not all processing is bad. Fortification adds vitamin D to your milk. Pasteurization prevents foodborne illness. But ultra-processing piles on emulsifiers, flavor enhancers, and preservatives that extend shelf life at the cost of nutrition.
And California's new law is really in response to this. And they're not expecting an overnight change. What they're looking to do is to phase out harmful ultra-processed food over time. The first thing they're going to do is by June 1st of 2028, they're asking state health agencies to define what are the ultra-processed foods of concern. Because it's really not that easy to say this is or isn't what we're talking about. So it's going to take time to define. By a year later, they want schools to start phasing out those items. And by July of 2032, so at this point,
7 years from now,
I'm just trying to add up how old my daughter is going to be. I'm like, is she driving yet? No, she won't be driving.
She'll never be driving.
But by 2032, vendors will be prohibited from offering those foods to schools. And then the final phase is in 2035. The law will ban them from school breakfasts and lunches entirely.
That's 10 years from now.
She will be 12. And eating school lunches, I'm sure. But not in California.
This is not just happening in California. Nationally, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is launching one of the biggest shifts in school nutrition.
And the USDA, they oversee school lunches for the whole country?
They do. And just recently, starting July 1st, 2025, they launched a new school meal nutrition standards that takes effect under the 2024 final rule. And for the first time, there will be product-specific limits on added sugars in foods that sneak into kids' diet the most. Breakfast cereals, yogurt, and flavored milk.
But here's what that really means. So for breakfast cereals, they're restricting the amount of added sugar there can be. In yogurt, exactly the same thing. A lot of these yogurts that are so appealing to kids have so much added sugar, so they're restricting how much can be in it. And ditto with flavored milk. I mean, I never had strawberry milk. It's not appealing to me, but a lot of kids like strawberry milk, chocolate milk. So it can still be there, but they have to tone down the sweetness. So that was the first part of this school lunch change that has already gone into effect. Anything else parents can expect to see in school lunches?
There's a second phase that's coming into effect. And so in the 2027 to 2028 school year, each week's menu, breakfast and lunch, must average no more than 10% of the total calories from added sugars.
Wow, that's a big change.
They're also requiring that school reduce drastically the amount of sodium or salt that are in meals, roughly about 15% in lunches and 10% in breakfasts.
And that sounds modest, but when you think about each and every day and how many kids eat school lunch, it can really add up to a lot. And so there's a little bit of time here for cafeteria and suppliers to reformulate foods, but this is coming up quick in 2 years from now.
And like you're saying, these numbers matter. Nearly 30 million children eat a federally supported school lunch every single day. And for many families, these meals provide up to half of a child's daily calorie intakes.
So even a few fewer teaspoons of sugar or a few hundred milligrams less sodium each day, it can translate into better blood pressure, healthier weight, and stronger long-term heart health.
The rule is also spotlighting whole grain-rich foods. At least 80% of grains each week must be whole grain.
And every reimbursable meal will still include fruits and vegetables. This is an evolution. It's not a revolution, but it is going to move school lunches overall closer to the same goal that California has already set. Less processed, more nourishing foods in schools that are still practical.
So that's at the USDA. Meanwhile, at the level of HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has made ultra-processed foods a centerpiece of his Make America Healthy Again agenda. In Senate testimony and public remarks, he's described these foods as, quote, poisoned, and blamed them for what he calls a mass poisoning of American children.
Doritos, Cheez-Its, Cap'n Crunch, gummy bears. Everyone knows that these are junk foods, so maybe you wouldn't be too surprised to see that the ingredients include a lot of poisons. So what's causing this suffering? I'll name two culprits. First and the worst is ultra-processed food. We're going to get rid of the dyes, and then one by one, we're going to get rid of every ingredient. The seed oils, they are associated with all kinds of very, very serious illnesses. Ultra-processed foods are what are the principal culprit.
RFK Jr. has pledged to develop the nation's first standardized definition of ultra-processed foods, a step that is essential for future regulation and nutritional policy, and kind of this first step of California's plan, defining like what actually are these foods.
And the MAHA movement has talked about this. So the MAHA's commission early materials suggested that they were going to take bold action on additives like synthetic food dyes and preservatives. And that was actually one of our early episodes about synthetic food dyes. But when the MAHA strategy report was actually released last month, critics said the tone had softened, and instead of immediate restrictions, the report made these promises that the government would continue with efforts to define ultra-processed food and study potential limits without actually laying out any clear timeline or enforcement. And in other words, they kept the rhetoric, but the roadmap was really unclear.
And I think there's a key distinction in here. While RFK Jr. is working in the Department of Health and Human Services and he's looking to ban things through the Food and Drug Administration, school meal standards actually fall under the USDA. So Kennedy can set tone, he can set research priorities, he can set restrictions of approved foods. But the USDA actually writes the school lunch rules. So on paper, this really feels like one topic, the first topic where RFK Jr. and Governor Gavin Newsom really might agree on. And yet, they're still arguing about who gets to ban the snack aisle first.
Still, despite some of this disagreement, I think we can all agree that California's plan to phase out ultra-processed foods in schools echoes part of the MAHA vision. And it's one of the first state-level laws that is matching what federal leaders have been talking about for years. Cleaner labels, fewer additives, and putting more real food on the tray. So, Alicia, are you ready for our pop quiz?
Pop quiz!
And you can play along at home yourself as well. I am going to name a food, and Alicia is going to tell me if it is ultra processed or not. Okay, Alicia, a little flavored yogurt, and we're going to add some sprinkles to it. What are we thinking?
That is going to be considered ultra processed. Flavored yogurt is filled with sweeteners. It has dyes for the color, and sprinkles are dyes galore. Stabilizers galore in there, but that's why they stay in your baking closet for years. I probably have the same pack of sprinkles since I graduated college.
Well, I think, okay, then the sprinkles made it too easy. This next one, are you ready?
Okay.
Number two, canned tomatoes.
Oh, this one's difficult. So the canning process is a processing. So it's not like fresh tomatoes from the vine, but it's not considered ultra processing. So I'm going to say processed, not ultra processed.
Sounds like not ultra. You're not ultra. Okay. Correct. It is processed, but not ultra processed. Number three, a whole grain loaf of bread.
That was actually really difficult, and it depends on the bread. If the ingredients of the bread are yeast and flour, salt, then not ultra processed. If it's, as what we call in French, the bread by the kilometer.
Yes, the smushy white bread. Mm-hmm.
This is whole grain. The smushy whole grain bread.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Smushy whole grain bread.
And then you look at the label and it just reads like a chemistry set. And like, who knows how long it's been on the shelf at the store? Probably ultra processed.
That was a very thorough and accurate response. I will take it.
Like bakery bread. Yay. Bread that comes in the like plastic bag with a little tie at the end that's on the shelf for maybe 6 weeks. Nay.
All right, and last one, those adorable dinosaur chicken nuggets.
Delicious. Do they come with a little cheese inside?
Yes.
Then that is classic ultra-processed food.
What about if it didn't have the cheese inside?
Still ultra-processed food. Does the chicken look like a dinosaur shape?
Yeah, no. That's how you know. So if you got at least a few of these right, you are ready for your dinner table trivia.
When you hear processed food ban, think evolution, not elimination. It's about nudging school towards food that fuels learning and long-term health.
Less sugar highs, fewer additives, more real food. And these changes could really help the cafeteria become a place that is promoting kids' health and well-being in a more concerted way.
And that's our show for today.
Thank you for listening in. I'm Dr. Stephanie Rowland.
I'm Dr. Alicia Rowland.
Please reach out to us on the socials. If you've enjoyed this, rate us. Give us a 5-star rating. We'd love that. Write a review. Share it with a friend.
You can reach out to us by email. Our email is rowland_show. That's rolin_show@gmail.com.
Or on any of the socials. Thank you for listening and looking forward to discovering these new generation of lunches that will help kids thrive. Dr. Sister
Science Facts. The future of healthy Lunchables.
It's so true. And being raised in a French family, when I'm joking about crepes, it's actually not a joke. We eat a lot of crepes.
We eat a lot of crepes. Breakfast crepes, dinner crepes, cheese crepes, sweet crepes, savory crepes.
Sweet and savory. If you put Nutella in it, it's for breakfast. And then if you put cheese in it, it's for dinner.
And if you put salmon in it, it's like a full meal.
It's a full meal. It's for lunch.